Everyone, and welcome to Playwright, a podcast about creating and sharing new ways to play. My name is Ryan Heyman, also called H.
And I'm Ryan Quintel, also called Q.
I learned this morning on Twitter by happenstance, by overseeing, I guess that's the, it's like the equivalent of overhearing, but you
I'm
do it on
hearing,
Twitter.
These are the things I'm hearing.
Overhearing somebody else's conversation that we had unfortunately mislabeled our good friend Sean Bell. We put on our website, we had a picture of somebody else standing in for Sean Bell. And in looking back on it, it is indeed correct. We did unfortunately sub in the face of the internet famous person Strong Bad, which we think it would be difficult to make that mistake. But if you knew Sean and just kind of the general shape of his head, I think you'll know where we're coming from on this one.
The thing that gets me, and I realize, so I'm the person that put the graphic, I'm raising my hand here, and it's time to take my lumps for this. But I have to tell you, the magic and the sad part about doing a podcast is we have guests on and we never necessarily have to see their face throughout the entire, 45 minute, 1 hour affair. So had Sean on, he was a great guest. Go back and listen to the episode. He pitched some cool stuff. Man, I just listened to this person's voice. I looked at that photo and I said, this is probably that
checks
guy.
Out. Yeah. It's a white person.
One Google search later. So I'm going to have to reach out to Sean and either get a high res photo from him or do a better Google. Have you been to the website letmegooglethatforyou.com?
Yeah, that's the thing that like people point to when they're just being a little cheeky on the internet, you know.
Yes, I love,
like somebody asks an obvious question, then somebody routes them to Let Me Google That For You, and it's like, well, okay, I know how to do this. The implication is that I don't know how to do this. Maybe I was asking because I want to have some sort of a social link out there with my friends instead of just typing it as some nameless and faceless robot.
Yeah, what I think is strange about it is they have little selections as to like what you can make a fake search do, and literally the choices are Google, of course, Bing, okay, Yahoo starting to get suspect. Then we get to AOL. Okay, when's the last time you searched AOL for anything? Do you have to type in a keyword? I don't know how AOL works anymore. And then ask.com. Ask Jeeves, our old buddy, still there as an option. So let me Google that for you. Obviously an unchanged site for some period of time now.
It's the evolution of what let me web crawler that for you. Let's get to some video games. Q, I think you're going first today. What are you going to bring us?
I absolutely am. And today I started picking back up Final Fantasy VII on Switch. So happy that I can play that game for the first time handheld. And it got me thinking, one of my favorite parts about that game was the chocobo racing. Now, I know there was a chocobo racing game, but it was really a really lame kart racer, and is not really indicative of the experience of having a chocobo race inside of Final Fantasy VII. So I thought, wouldn't it be cool to pitch a chocobo racing game where you're actually riding the chocobos, maybe you're playing a jockey, but half of the game is racing and the other half is actually managing your chocobo farm, you know, feeding, breeding, Tamagotchi style, like getting all your sort of Pokemon proclivities on with chocobos and trying to make the best chocobo you can in the world. And you can even, you know, do the right stuff to make them cosmetically cool. I don't want to get too far into it. I think you've got it. So let's start there.
All right. And I'll go ahead and start the clock. So chocobo racing, as it was in Final Fantasy VII, I've never actually played Final Fantasy VII. I was more of a 6 and 8 kid.
Oh no!
Weirdly enough.
Wait a minute, that explains so much.
No, both excellent games. Final Fantasy VI still totally holds up. But anyways, I was kind of under the impression by osmosis that the chocobo racing was just something that you kind of like bet on and didn't actively participate in. Is that accurate?
Yes and no. So you do actually, you're competing. You're riding the chocobo around the track. You can have the chocobo sort of ridden for you. I'm also looking forward to hearing this pitch with that crazy chocobo music in the background that I'm sure you're going to dive in. You have the option of doing that, but you can also kind of manage a little bit of chocobo farm. And if you use the right chocobos, you like kind of capture the right chocobos in the field, then you can get two chocobos to have a baby chocobo. And if you get the right baby chocobo, you get a gold, shiny, glittery chocobo, if you will. And that is like the fastest chocobo that you could possibly have. So its stats become maxed out and you can win every race easily. So it's a good way to both A, make money, but B, I think it's the only way to get a certain piece of materia, which is the sort of magic inside of Final Fantasy VII. So you have to get a certain spell. And the only way to do it is to kind of max out this chocobo side game as Final Fantasies are one to do.
I have heard of this gold chocobo before. And so, you know, it's held in high regard by those who have played the game, and I guess it takes a lot of grinding to finally get to it. So, all right, so there's some aspect of controllability here. Again, as somebody kind of inexperienced with the original game, what is it that that brings you back to the Chocobo race as opposed to all the other types of racing games? Like, what really sets it apart mechanically that interested you in the first place?
Well, I think the thing that I liked about the Chocobo racing was that if you are using sort of a lower level Chocobo or a Chocobo that you just kind of caught in the wild, then the chocobo itself is kind of a participant in the race. It will tug you to the left and tug you to the right throughout this sort of the psychedelic courses that are in Final Fantasy VII for chocobo racing. And so I loved the idea of, obviously you'd want to go, you know, very modern and much more complex with it, but having the feeling of racing a living creature of sorts and really the time that you put in with it, you know, Red Dead Redemption style, the more time you spend with the animal, the more sort of petting and sort of reps you get in with practice, the more you have a better bond with the creature and potentially performing better in the race. Maybe there's other ways to kind of goose those things, but you want to, like, while you're not racing, maybe you can even only race other people online. When you're not doing that, you need to be working on your relationship with the creature.
All right, so you've got a relationship with a living creature. This is kind of a, even like a Ben-Hur type of chariot races. So let's think of mechanically some interesting things that we can do with this. There's one key difference from cars, and that is the kind of flexibility, perhaps, the fact that this is a living creature and maybe gives you a little bit more flexibility to cover difficult terrain or something that a car couldn't race on. So if we're going to lean into a real creature, living creature racing game, then I would want to emphasize the aspects that a car racing game absolutely couldn't do.
Yeah, so one of the things, it's funny that you use Ben-Hur as an example, because in that sort of iconic scene, Ben-Hur is racing and the person alongside of him is sort of, as bad guys are wont to do, brutally sort of whipping their horses next to Ben-Hur, who's obviously the paragon of good guy, right? So he's not gonna do that, but whipping his horses kind of end with both getting a similar, if not, you know, the same result, if not for the way that that scene ends, potentially makes the animals more unpredictable, right? So I love the idea of, as cruel as this might be for animal lovers, and I'm among them, the idea of there's no potential quote-unquote right way kind of race your chocobo, right? Like, some people want to race their chocobos very, very hard, and that should be a way to kind of, you know, almost like the aggressive driver in a Forza game. Mm-hmm. Not to, I know we're talking about, hey, how's this not like a car? But at the idea of like the physical motivation of the creature versus the kind of toughing it out and managing the creature's stamina throughout the race, I think is interesting. Now, how to go beyond that, I'm struggling with like the type of, how do we get past the horse, quote unquote, systems that we've seen in so many games at this point?
Let's think about an interesting control method, because, you know, this is a different type of, we're not steering a steering wheel. We're doing something very different, whether we are whipping the creatures or whether we're kind of pulling it to the side using reins.
Mm-hmm.
I can see this working in a similar way to the also very special Star Wars Episode One racer.
Oh man,
which stood out because of you could play it with kind of a normal control scheme on computer and on N64, but just the arcade setup and then the optional control scheme that kind of controls it like a Katamari game where you're kind of managing the thrust of both of your engines was really what kind of sold that experience for me.
And that actually reminds me. So some of the courses, you could design courses almost modern Mario Kart style where there are sections that are a little bit in the air, there are sections that are underwater. And so if you introduce those type of environments, mm-hmm. then you could potentially get different breeds of chocobo. So we can go way deep into the subgenre of chocobo here that I don't even know if really exists, but you can build it out mm-hmm. and say, okay, well, this breed is actually handles itself better underwater, or this breed has larger wings, so it's going to have better glide and flight time. And you are trying to sort of balance that whole, I don't know what the graph is called, but do you know the graph that's kind of sectioned out like slices of pizza and each thing can kind of fill up on its own and one kind of tugs at the other?
One always tugs at the other, not off the top of my head.
Yeah, it's like if a chocobo is a bar graph, but the bar graph has properties on the left and right, and it's kind of, it can be one way or the other. And
I see.
You're trying to balance those things.
Okay, that makes sense.
Because if we give like the courses really nice verticality, or we give mm-hmm. them really interesting obstacles, I think then you get into what breed is better for what. It's like if you could in a racing game say, hey, it's fair game to bring a sports car to this off-roading event, but there's going to be certain disadvantages with that, except for when you're totally straight out in the section where there's tarmac, right?
So what if you are in a almost like a basket, like a hot air balloon basket, suspended between two chocobo on with ropes on either side, and then the chocobo can control independently using the two thumbsticks or, you know, in some manner, and the track has splits in it that you have to take, and you have to somewhat kind of like balance your character between the two of them. And you can use that to try to trip up enemies or to, I don't know, hogtie one of them, like the Star Wars walkers. I don't know.
That's really cool. That made me think, what if you did the sort of Ben-Hur like chariot style race and you had to have multiple different types of chocobo. You couldn't have duplicate chocobo. And not only do those chocobo have to have different strengths and stuff to pull you throughout different legs of the race, but off the field, you have to make sure that those chocobo actually have a good relationship with each other. Whether that's like, oh, I always ride these two together, and like, how do you bring up a new chocobo? Well, you have to get it starting to ride with the old one, but if you ride it with one of the previous ones too long, it will miss its old partner. So you're always kind of balancing like, okay, this chocobo needs to get reps, but I want to put it with this veteran chocobo, and you kind of have the like veterans training the rookies until you have like a stable of veterans that can bring up any sort of breed of chocobos, and different breeds don't get along, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, we are at our 10 minutes, so this might be an easy task. What are we going to call this video game?
Oh, man. What was the chocobo racing game already called?
It was just called Chocobo Racing.
Okay, well, since that's taken, what if we emphasize the off-the-field stuff a little bit and called it, like, Chocobo Rancher or something like that? What is the chariot race called? Is it just called a chariot race?
I think so.
Yeah, Chocobo Rancher, or maybe Chocobo Chariot or something.
Okay. I think that'll do just fine. All right, we'll go over to my pitch today. And what I'm bringing in is kind of inspired by the current political situation, but it's not so much of a bummer, I hope. You are a revolutionary that has unknowingly, or not unknowingly to you, unknowingly to everyone else, you have implanted an emotional control device in the world leader that you're, you know, seeking to control. And the politician still has free will, but you can influence and control the emotions of the person as they are kind of going about their presidential duties or whatever. And so, you know, you don't have direct control, but while he or she is giving speeches or meeting with other countries or whatever, then, you know, just kind of like our current president is susceptible to wild mood swings that affect his rule. So too can you influence the mood and potential outcomes of the world. So I'll go ahead and start the clock there.
The idea of getting feedback as to the leader's emotional state, checking their Twitter or something. So you get that kind of SimCity City Skylines little feed as to what's going on with that person.
I mean, if you're in direct control, though, presumably you would have a pretty, you know, direct line as to what this person is feeling.
Oh, so am I in physical proximity to this person? Like, or is this more like I guess it'd be less fun if I'm just a weirdo in a lair or something?
Yeah, you could just be watching stuff on TV or kind of overseeing it in the back of the room, kind of like a Manchurian candidate type situation. But so you're not necessarily like hooked up like a stock car on a cable or something like that, but you are watching things happen and kind of fine tuning your little emotion dial. Maybe it's like a grid, like a color grid that you can kind of drag a point around.
That's interesting. I do like the idea of it being abstract. So there's this, there's an audio company called Bang & Olufsen, and they make an app to control the sort of equalizer on their speaker. And instead of giving really like concrete controls that people would be familiar with / feel safe with, they decided to give this like, you know, two-dimensional X and Y graph. And they're like, here's a dot that you can drag around and experiment with how the sound feels. And the quadrants are called like warmth and depth and all this kind of stuff. So maybe there's like emotional quadrants that you can push the leader towards, but you could only push them, you can only nudge the quadrants so much in any one time.
Okay, so maybe, yeah, it requires some sort of an energy or some sort of a resource to move this around, you know, but I don't want to necessarily discourage the kind of fun that I would have just kind of like bouncing the point back and forth and watching this person
flail,
watching whatever kind of reactive systems that the game has set up to interpret all of these actions, like really kind of go crazy. So maybe there is a kind of like an overheat mechanic where if emotions become too extreme for too long, then they have the possibility of breaking somebody's mind or causing some sort of a permanent damage or causing them to break down. And then all of a sudden, you know, they've ended the press conference that they're giving. They've not obviously communicated the idea that you wanted to get across, that you wanted to subtly influence. And so you kind of lost your chance at having this influence.
I like the idea, though, of potentially locking in some choice before you see it play out. Like, I don't know if it's maybe it's almost like a setup and a play phase where you're like, okay, what happens when I give him a really bad morning and a really great afternoon and a lousy evening? And just you keep pushing all those buttons to see like what kind of policy the leader enacts based on that stuff.
You know, maybe that's something, is that like there are certain cues around the White House or wherever this leader is located that you can choose to react to in different ways. And so it's like every time that he sees the press secretary, he gets violently ill. And every time that he sees an immigrant, he becomes very happy or something. And it's like a sign of operant conditioning this person to react in opposite ways that they are prone to in left untouched.
Right. It just reminds him of his mother. Is there a fun way to tie like strange memories into it? Wouldn't it be cool if you almost had like a switchboard of memories, almost like you're working with an analog synthesizer or something, and you're like, oh, what happens when I plug the like the father into like the abuse call, you know, like strange stuff like that. I'm like, okay, what if I just keep like rewiring this person's life experiences and confuse them in that way. That could be kind of interesting to see. Oh, well, you know, memory and so much of our experience is just about association. So being able to mess with the mental associations a person had could be cool.
Yeah. You just kind of gave me an idea of turning, or not necessarily requiring, but, you know, when this is shown around at exhibitions or just as an optional control scheme using one of those like DJ boards that people have and plug into their MacBooks and get paid a lot of money to host parties for. And so, you know, you have those, you have lots of sliders, you've got potentially like sample buttons. I'm not a DJ, so I don't know what anything is called. You got knobs and stuff, and it kind of like auto detects the hardware that you have and maps on a lot of these different controls. And so, you know, you have these really fine analog controls for all of these different inputs that you can mix and match in different ways.
Yeah, like the idea of, so my buddy Steven recently picked up a Moog grandmother is literally the name of the synthesizer, which is a wild name.
Which I think, just to kind of curtail emails, I think that synthesizer aficionados will insist it's called Moog, I believe.
Oh, yes, sorry, the Moog grandmother.
Which is just not how it's spelled, so really kind of get it together, people.
Yeah, my B on the Moog confusion. So he let me play with it, and what I thought was interesting is you can take an effect that is a left or right dial, and then you can plug it into another effect and either they stack or they become a different control for that thing. So I almost wonder if like you had a control of like how often the person is eating, and then you tie that to like how happy they are, and you can like mess with the physicality even of the person. You'd be like, okay, well, the only way they're happy is when they eat, and they're going to give this briefing at a time where they're famished, and so I know I'm going to get the kind of results I want.
Or you can over time like get them really fat or something like that, you know.
Yeah.
Really just watch, change everything.
Just really ruin this person's life.
This is kind of like turning into an interesting thing. Like, even if this wasn't like a political, like that's a cool component. I don't necessarily want to move away from that, but like this could work as a plugin for The Sims, where you don't have direct control over The Sims. They just kind of go about their average everyday life, but you can change their emotions. So kind of like the reverse Sims, where normally you can control everything that they do and their emotions are completely out of control.
No, I know what you mean. If somebody who is able to affect something in the world and you are able to, and I think one of the things we've got here that is just a fundamentally interesting game idea is, what if you were managing somebody's thoughts and ideas or emotions in a way that is visual and easy to understand, but stacks in such a way that potentially it's unexpected what the results of your actions will be. So it's surprising for you, and it's almost comical in its execution, but at the same time, it's interesting. It's an interesting play space to kind of express yourself.
And then perhaps there's kind of a late game twist where maybe another nation that you've been going kind of toe to toe with this entire time, trying to avoid war or steer yourself into war, just whatever way you want this to go, and the tensions are running high, their leader is also controlled by another person at some point. And so it's just kind of like being John Malkovich showdown at the end between these two puppet masters and their puppets. You both know that the other is in control, but you can't kind of, you know, you can't outwardly express that.
It's almost like now it's civilization, but all you can control is the AI expression of
exactly,
each of the leaders.
All right, let's close that down and let's give it a name.
I wonder if there's something here that's like erratic or something like that, something that's unpredictable, mercurial, if you will.
There is the famous, I guess they're all famous at this point, the Trump tweet, unprecedented, which is always kind of a fun, I don't necessarily want to make this entirely a Trump thing, but it is kind of a fun misspelling.
Unprecedented. Unprecedented is pretty good.
Let's stick with that and let's move on to our community pitch. This comes from a familiar name. This comes from Chesney Mooncalf, who says, "What's up, my homies? Thank you. I have not been greeted like that in a very long time. I appreciate it."
Yeah. Hey.
I would like to propose, oh my, oh, a game. Here, all right. I'd like to propose a game where you create and develop a religious cult along the lines of the Movementarians in The Simpsons. As your religion grows, you build churches and appoint people to be preachers. Also, you get to stage an occasional miracle and maybe create your own religious books for followers to live by. As you can see, I haven't fully fleshed out the idea yet, not least the winning-losing conditions yet, but hopefully you guys will have something to run with here. Looking forward to hearing your thoughts. Thank you very much, Chesney, and let's get to it.
I believe I left this as one of our, like, final thoughts at the end of one of our first episodes. H, do you remember that at all?
I have no memory of anything previous to last Thursday.
All right. Wow, that sounds like you should get that checked out. Anyway,
I can't wait to play Super Smash Bros. Ultimate. It sounds great.
It's going to be incredible. Yeah, so this was an idea that I think we had bandied about, but yeah, we hadn't fleshed out either. So let's get into it. What makes a cult? First of all, recruitment. I feel like you got to have some fun, interesting way of like recruiting people. Either
well,
like
let's slow down here and let's define our terms. So okay. A cult, I guess the way that I picture it is like something that is like fundamentally deceitful and untrue. Whereas the way that I read this, and maybe I'm alone in this, is it sounds like you are actually a God figure that can like bestow miracles and stuff. I don't know. Am I reading too much into the pitch? Or because if you are actually a god, then it's not really a cult. It's just like a truth of the universe.
Well, I mean, he says you get to stage the occasional miracle.
Oh,
so
I see. Okay.
I feel like that at least allows some flexibility of creating an illusion that your followers will believe is true, based on, of course, your extensive teachings that you've outlined for them.
Now, there are a couple of cult-type games that are kind of on the rise these days. Cult Simulator, Cultist Simulator, rather, excuse me, is a strategy card type of game that you can play. It's on Steam now, about building a cult. There is also, gosh, I can picture it, but I can't remember what it's called. It has some level of Lovecraftian, and it has like a really striking, like limited color palette aesthetic as well. All about kind of building a cult in reverence of these Lovecraftian beings that come around once every 50 years or so.
I'm not familiar with it.
Yeah, if you're into cults, then Steam's the place to go.
Yeah, that, amongst other things.
There's an idea that I've been thinking of that I haven't really, like, it's one of those things that was kind of bouncing around, but I haven't found like a real hook to bind it in with. And I just want to see if there's anything here. Is I'm very interested in a game that is played kind of at different time scales, multiple things happening at different time scales from one another. So you play as kind of a being that moves incredibly slowly, like a, you know, giant rock god or rock monster or something that just barely creeps along, like, you know, just inches every day or something like that. And so essentially while you're moving normal speed or slightly below normal speed to kind of sell the heaviness of this, you see around you almost like, you know, societies and people running here and there and people moving all about. And in like a stop motion
Gulliver
type of like super fast.
Oh, okay. Got it.
Yeah. So everything around you, there's a short
so
film
like a
that
time
I remember
lapse
seeing.
Or something.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So everything around you looks like a time lapse, except for you that are moving like very, very slowly. But then, you know, you can play into like, do the people know that you are alive? Do they care? Do they build around you, or do you find ways to kind of elevate certain objects? Do you become a god? Do you become a statue in the middle of town that people don't notice is in a slightly different position every year?
I mean, I think it's interesting to kind of create the feeling of being a being like that. I'm just thinking about, so some of the things that like Chesney's talking about here, mm-hmm. Oh my God, are you ready for this? Here's a true confession. I haven't really watch much of The Simpsons. I don't like it that much.
Really? Okay.
I know. I'm one of the only people
You seem like the kind of person that would really like it, but I guess not.
Yeah, I don't. I'm told this about Seinfeld as well, but I'm like a Curb Your Enthusiasm person, so maybe I don't know. Maybe I'm a.
Well, that is common blood there. So
yeah, totally. So the movementarians. Could you tell me anything about them?
So the movementarians was an episode of The Simpsons where The Simpsons joined a cult. Essentially, it's kind of what you would expect it to be there, used for manual labor, and they're promised a spaceship that goes to a different planet, you know, false promises, deceptive leader, that kind of thing.
So I haven't played Cultist Simulator, but I imagine it's going to deal with some of this stuff. But the Wild Wild Country documentary essentially outlines how this guy moves from India and then he stands up a tiny little community in a rural section of Washington State, maybe even outside of Portland, and then like establishes a set of principles that get people coming. I love the idea of having something akin to a little village simulator where you're just trying to manage your own cult's village, but you have choices almost like Frostpunk, where you're like, okay, are we going to enact this thing? We're going to enact everybody has to provide money. Okay, fine. Now your cult is getting money. You have to, like, your cult has to generate money, right? That's always a big thing of cults. Mm-hmm. You have to actively recruit new people. You have to deal with, because you're essentially setting up a mini society. And like an interesting thought exercise you give people is like, okay, what do you think the rules should be? And then conversely, once those rules are established, the next set of things is, how do you want to deal with people who break these rules? You know,
and yeah, interesting.
So now you're kind of putting somebody in a position like, okay, well, these are the rules. Like, how do we discourage breaking the rules? Because like, that's essentially what laws are. We invented things like prison, the death penalty, you know, all this crazy stuff that humans do is all in favor of like scaring people essentially into following the rules, in the same way that the Catholic Church has like confession and sin is like a way to like understand what people's thoughts and desires are, like all of this stuff. Like, how could a cult do it? And that is equally interesting to me, of like this psychological simulator, but maybe with some like almost, it would seem almost comedic in its absurdity, I imagine.
One of the things that always bums me out whenever I see like cult type of stuff, like, it's just one of those subjects that kind of makes me uncomfortable a little bit.
Yeah.
And, you know, watching the documentaries and stuff, like, it's fascinating from a psychological perspective, but it's all, you know, like, whether they, I mean, so many of them end in like mass suicides, and it's just like kind of a nasty business, and it's all like polygamous marriages that the leader is just taking advantage of women in the tribe or whatever. It's just, I don't know, it all feels very gross. Like, what if this was very, very positive cult that is like actually doing good, but like everyone is still like, what are they up to? You know, but you're there just trying to do your best to run the best darn cult, like a cult run by Guybrush Threepwood, where he's just like, hey, what's the big deal? Like, I'm trying my best.
I love the idea of trying to have the first quote unquote good cult. I searched Steam, and there's also, it looks like a game called Honey, I Joined a Cult that looks a little bit like this, right? Where you have, it's a village simulator.
Rick Moranis.
Yeah. Yeah. Rick Moranis is in it. He gets very small. But no, there's like places for the people to pray, and there's, you know, education centers and stuff. So like, if you're going to set up a mini society, right? Like, societies eventually need all of the things that modern society has potentially. They might need schools, or you're going to not, you know, and you're almost going to get into the city sim aspect of like, well, I educated people.
Of course, we turned this back into a city sim.
Yeah, of course I did. You know, once you educate people, you're forced with, oh, well, they don't want to do the toilet cleaning jobs anymore unless you like made it a part of your founding religion that like, our cult has the cleanest toilets. That's like, you're the toilet cult. And I love the idea of really attempting to be wholesome. And I think it's interesting to allow the game and reward the wholesome quote unquote cult mini community thing, but ultimately some aspect of the quote good cult, I think, has to be dark, right? Because mm-hmm. at some point you have to stop people from watching TV or something. You know, you have to, you know, stop information from getting in, because all the information that's out in the world, essentially every new person can come and be the person that, you know, upends the whole thing with just some contrarian ideas.
We can kind of build like a story mode on top of this, which is something that not a lot of city builder type games have, where,
yeah,
you know, you're in cult college and with all these other people studying to become cult leaders, and you're just there, you're so earnest, and you just want to do a good job and make people happy, and everyone's laughing at you like, this will never work. And you're just out there to prove them wrong, and the world doubts you because they're so wary of cults, but you just want to, you know, get out there and do your very best.
Yeah, and the idea of, like, the micro fun that you can have, where fashion souls is a thing, where you are designing the cult outfits, mm-hmm. and because you're the leader of the cult, you can make decrees. So you're like, hey, everybody, we're done with robes. We all wear bikinis now, you know, and just like enact that policy and watch every person walking around slowly, like, go into their little rooms and come out in bikinis instead of robes, you know, in some ungodly pattern or color. And maybe even, right, so as you develop sets of beliefs, you can share those as cult starting points for other members of the community. So someone's like, oh, I like the, you know, the same way that people did with actual religion. They're like, I really like some of the tenets here, but I'm just going to take it a little bit different direction. I appreciate it.
Anyways, that's all the time we have on that one. Let's wrap it up and give it a name.
The definition of cult: a system of religious veneration and devotion directed towards a particular figure or object. The second definition: a relatively strange group of people having religious beliefs or practices regarded by others as strange or sinister.
So it's a prerequisite of it being strange people, and also other people consider it strange.
Did you just crack it? Should the game just be called Strange People?
Sure.
I mean, that's pretty good. It says so much.
Really catch the Stranger Things crowd as well.
That's right. Let's get that SEO juice, baby.
All right. Strange People, thank you very much, Chesney Mooncalf, for sending that in. And if you would like to send in your own pitch, your own video game idea, then you can do so by going to playwrightcast.com/pitch. You can email us, playwrightcast@gmail.com, or you can tweet us at playwrightcast.
Special thank you to Protodome for the use of our theme song, Hello World, off the album Blue Noise. And thank you to our parent network, the Kane and Rince Network, where there are great shows like The Sausage Factory, Interviews with Game Developers, Sound of Play. Hey, I'm going to be on that too. So cross-promotion synergy, and then you'll hear
you
me talk
have
about
it at this point.
Oh, okay. I already have been. So you'll hear me talk about this show. It's wonderful. It's just back and forth and back and forth. Kane and Rince, the video game review podcast. I have been listening to the Final Fantasy VII podcast as I go through the motions of the beginning of Final Fantasy VII, which I've probably played 1,000 times already. So it's very fun and meditative, and everybody's tones are very dulcet. I'm afraid of ever being asked to go on that show in fear of being too animated for what is an otherwise very relaxing and adult podcast.
A very adult podcast.
Indeed.
All right. Well, why don't you take us out with a short little pitch to just kind of cleanse our palates as we move back into the real world.
A game where you play as the evil corporation OCP from the RoboCop universe, attempting over and over to make the perfect but inevitably futile attempts at a new RoboCop.
All right. We'll see you next week.
Bye. We'll be right back.